Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here this week and spend some time with you all now or later, as we have so many people that listen to this later. That's what I love about the podcasting and just the way we can do things now with technology. And I hope you're having a wonderful, wonderful, blessed day today. And we are going to spend the next hour with an incredible person. Our guest has tons of experience in so many aspects of life, business, etc. And I'm going to go over that a little bit. And what he's doing is working. It seems like everything he touches turns to gold. And I know in this day and age, there's just so many processes and so many choices, and it goes on and on and on. I mean, you can't even go to the store and I'm an old timer. We used to go to the store and you could pick three of something. Now there's 100 of something. So Neil really has figured out the formulas. He today, if you've ever, I don't know how many people on the call have heard of Coyote City, Utah.
Coyote Creek.
Coyote Creek, okay. Thank you. So I put Coyote Creek, Utah. It's prime time to buy. Neil's going to fill us in on some interesting what he's working on, what projects he's working on. And so before I introduce you, I'm going to go through, and Neil Bawal brings extremely strong strategic and operational experience to his businesses. He owns and manages an extensive multifamily and single-family portfolio of over 1,000 units in 7-plus states. We'll find out how many now. That valued at over $111 million. Neil speaks at multifamily events, IRA events, and meetups across the country. Nearly 2,000 students attend his multifamily seminar series each year, and hundreds attend his multifamily boot camps. He is the co-founder of the largest multifamily investing meetup in the U.S., BAMF, with over 3,000 members. He leads the company and is driving the syndication and acquisition of multifamily properties. Neil's past experience includes 17 years of revenue P&L experience as the senior most executive in a California education company with over 350 employees and $40 million in revenue. Wow. Without further ado, welcome, Neil Bowell. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me on the show again, Lately. I'm really thrilled to be here.
And I apologize for saying Coyote City because that's what's in my and it's so Coyote Creek, and I hadn't heard about it. And, you know, I've been in the business for a long time, but I guess it's a real special place. And it sounds like you always find these special places before they really take off. So
well, that's
I'm going to
really
turn it over
my
to you today because we only have an hour, and what you do is so interesting about how you do it. And I want to hear why we should go to Coyote Creek City or Coyote Creek.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me give you kind of a feedback. The property that I'm building is called Coyote Creek, so that the project itself is called Coyote Creek. But actually happens to be inside another city, and that city is called Washington City. Small city, very small city. It's inside a metro called St. George, Utah, right? So a lot of people haven't heard of Washington City. A lot of people haven't heard
now
of St. George. Right?
Okay.
Coyote Creek is the actual project,
that
I'm building. But really going back to your question on, you know, I basically find out about places before people hear about them, right? So that's kind of the brand. And yes, our portfolio has gone up a lot. So, you know, since the last time we talked, we've added about $90 million in new projects. And then we've added about five, 600 investors to our network. So it's been going really well.
Wow.
Using the formula that I'm going to talk about today, and it's a formula that anyone can use. Honestly, it's not magic. It seems like magic. It works like magic for sure, but it's really straightforward. And that formula is that you have to accept that everything in real estate is affected by demographics, right? Demographics is the study of things like population, job growth, income growth, crime, and home price growth, right? And you have to accept that,
right,
that before you start looking at a house, before you start looking at an apartment complex, you first have to really have an understanding of the underlying demographics of that area. And demographics are so powerful that buying the same exact house is – yeah. You can get double or triple the profits.
Right, but I want to go back a little bit and say I've known Neil for a while now because he's been on our show before, and I've seen what he's been doing. It's amazing. So when we got information on this, Coyote Creek was like, let's get him on right away. Let's get you on right away. So I apologize for the mix-up there because I knew what you're doing because you've done it before. And that, so I just want to mention that. And backing up, I remember on one of the shows saying to you, we were hearing that Detroit was a great place to go. And you said, no, there were different reasons not to. And part of that is what you're talking about now, not just, you know, besides it with the demographics using your formula. To really do it the right way.
Yes, because it allows you to separate the hype from the reality. So one of the examples I like to use when I'm talking on these podcasts and shows is that Detroit is actually a wonderful example of that. So, you know, I think Detroit is one of our legendary cities. At some point, it was actually the biggest city in America, even larger than New York from a metro and you know, dollar perspective. And these days, Natalie, everyone talks about Detroit is making a comeback. Detroit is doing great things. There's something magical or wonderful going on about Detroit. And you hear about this all the time. And when I look at the mathematics, the demographics of Detroit, I see absolutely no improvement. What I do see is that some areas of the city, especially some parts of downtown, appear to be doing a lot better. The prices are going up. Here's the question, though.
Right, okay.
I see no reason for them to be going up other than hype or other than the fact that we are in a recovery where even Detroit is at 3% or 4% unemployment. My question is, what happens when there's a next recession? I do not believe that there is any fundamental change in Detroit. It still is one of the most corrupt places in America. It's still a place that has huge problems when it comes to pensions. It's a place that has very, very challenging issues. It's in a cold state, and what's happening is its state and states around it are slowly losing population to the warm states in America, right? So the Sun Belt is stealing population.
Right.
There's only one state in America at this point in time that is a very cold state and is not losing population to the Sun Belt. I study migration patterns. That happens to be Minnesota. With the exception of Minnesota, every cold state in America is slowly losing population, and it's a slow tragedy where basically the cold states are emptying out and losing people to the warmer states. That hasn't changed at all for Detroit. And here's the biggest thing. I want to tell people this, right? You hear about a place turning around, and I challenge you to show me any examples in history over the last 50 years where some state or city has turned around while still losing population, And Detroit has been losing population since 1961. And if you go in to Google, this is not hard to do. What I'm mentioning is not something that you need to, you know, have an Excel spreadsheet and start doing macros and formulas. Just go to Google and type in population space Detroit, Michigan, and hit enter. And Google is immediately going to give you a graph. And that graph's going to show you that between the 1960s and today, never has there been, even for a single year, a point where Detroit stopped losing population. Not once.
Wow.
And until that happens for five years, and those 5 years are an upturn in population, increase in population, how do you say a place has actually turned around? And so I think what people are saying is hype. Most of the people that are saying Detroit is turning around have a financial benefit from saying that. They're saying it because they have something to sell people in Detroit, or they want to get out of Detroit and they want to sell something out to other people so they can get out. And that's what I'm seeing, right? I'm not saying that good things are not happening in Detroit. All cities that are losing population, I would pick Cleveland. Let's pick Pittsburgh. All of these cities that are losing population do have investments going into them because they're big cities. They have 500,000 or 1 million people. There's investments going on. There's people, companies every day announcing expansions in Detroit. That doesn't mean that the area is turning around. Somebody like Amazon announcing that they're going to do a $100 million project in Detroit or in Pittsburgh is not the same as the city turning around, because it's a big city. It has lots of people. And for every company that is going in like Amazon, there's a company that's losing, like Sears. And that's just going to balance out. That's just business. Somebody wins, somebody loses. But in the end, if it's bleeding population, how can the city be winning? It's just a fundamental question that not enough people ask. It cannot be winning. And that is what I've seen over and over again, that when you invest in real estate, if you want to win, you have to game the system in your favor. You have to do what is legal cheating. You have to understand demographics, because demographics are like a tailwind for your aircraft. When you're flying at 500 miles an hour, if you get a 200-mile tailwind or a 300-mile tailwind, which happens sometimes, your plane is now going at 800, and that's demographics. But if you get a 200 or 300-mile headwind, Natalie, your plane is only going at 200 or 300. There's a big difference between going at 800 and going at 300. And that's what demographics gives you. And the study of demographics is not very hard. Used to be very hard. Back in the 80s, people would charge you $30,000 or $40,000 a year to give you access to the data. Today, you don't have to pay three cents. The data is all in front of you. And it is marvelously, marvelously compelling. And when you start looking at the trends, when you start looking at the data, you're going to start saying, even if Detroit is turning around, I'm not going to make a risk that it goes back to declining. I'm going to pick these other cities that nobody knows about that, you know, the last 10 years have been extraordinary.
Let me. There's always an exception to a rule. So, for example,
yes.
the resort areas, or like Hawaii, for example, which
yep.
has been going up and up and up and up. I mean, it really went down in the 90s with the Japanese bubble beforehand,
yep.
and then it really went down. And it's been consistently going up since then. What about areas like that, the resort areas that still do go up? There's going to be a ceiling at some point because you only have so much land and so many investments coming in. They're not going to have the huge companies coming in, areas like that. Just what's your thought on that, resort areas?
In my mind, those kind of situations are special. And Hawaii clearly at this point has run out of land. And one
right.
of the things that I encourage people to do is, you know, if you're in real estate, right, most likely you're a landlord, right? Could be, you know, single family, a duplex. You could have a 300 unit like me. But what I encourage you to do is to look at not today, but the future. So I want to give you a crystal ball that is available to everybody. So everyone that's listening onto this show can go to a website, and it's called weareapartments.org. Don't forget .org, right? Weareapartments.org. And I want you to go to this website. It's a magnificent website that basically tracks the shortage of housing in America by metro. And you'll notice that the
really?
Metro that has the worst shortage, yep, it's amazing because it projects it 13 years, or actually now 11 years into the future, right? So their projections into the future are shown on this website in a very easy to understand graphical format. So this is not a website that has, you know, tables. This is a website that has beautiful graphs. And if you go there and you select Honolulu, you'll notice that of all the cities listed there, right, of every single city listed there, it has the greatest shortage. The reason for that is the new construction restrictions that Honolulu imposes are the highest in the country. And there's a speed dial there, right? So that you'll see a graph and you'll see
right.
the 11 years of shortage. And to the left, you'll see a speed dial. And that speed dial shows you how restrictive a city is against new construction. And you'll notice that for Honolulu, that speed dial is turned all the way to the right. And it's the only city in America where that dial is all the way to the right. Where what that dial is
wow.
saying is this city does not want you to build anything more, because they believe that they're at the right size. So now as a landlord, if you cannot build something new, but the population keeps growing because they don't have the ability to stop people from coming here, right? People
right.
can come in here. And the moment that happens, you've got a great opportunity as a landlord. So I believe, even though I'm not investing in Hawaii because of its high prices and, you know, cash flow challenges,
right.
that
right.
Hawaii represents an incredible opportunity over the next 15 or 20 years. You have no supply and demand that continues to increase. So check out Honolulu at weareapartments.org,
right.
and it'll open your eyes to what's going to happen in the next 11 years in Honolulu's apartment market.
I love it. Fantastic. Well, now,
and by the way, check out some other, you know, yeah,
yeah.
I want you to check
yeah,
out some other great
my...
cities there, Pittsburgh, for example, or Phoenix. And you'll notice Phoenix has a huge shortage and Pittsburgh has no shortage at all. So it's stark,
really?
Right, how there's a difference, right? People think there is a real estate cycle. And one of the things I like to tell people, Natalie, is there is no real estate cycle. If you want to be a successful real estate investor, the first thing you need to understand is there is no real estate cycle. There are real estate cycles with an S at the end of it. And there are hundreds of cycles in the United States. It is possible for one city to be in the ninth inning of the ballgame and for another city to be in the second inning of the ballgame at the same time, right? And it
wow.
depends on so many different factors. And what's amazing is a baseball ballgame only goes forward, right? So after the fifth inning, you can only have the sixth inning. But here's the next thing that you have to understand about real estate cycles. They can go both ways. In a real estate cycle, you can
sure.
have a fifth inning, and then you can step backwards to a fourth inning and backwards to a third inning and then start going forward again. So Washington, D.C., in this particular recovery, has actually been all the way to ninth inning and then to overtime and then stepped backwards to eighth and seventh and sixth and is now going towards ninth again. So these are two fundamental truths that if people understand, they're going to become investors, not speculators. There are real estate cycles. And in a cycle, a city can go backwards because of other factors, like Amazon comes in and opens a $500 million distribution center in Kentucky. And all of a sudden, that means that that city now is in a different space. So now it goes from the sixth inning of the ballgame to the third inning and can start on that cycle anew and can keep going up a much longer than places that simply don't have that kind of tailwind. So these things are so powerful, so unimaginably powerful when it comes to wealth creation, that I'm stunned that the fact that they're freely available, just a few bookmarks away on the web, and not enough real estate investors are using them, astounds me, right? It stuns me. And I'm a geek, right? I'm a nerd.
I love it. No, you're brilliant, though. You're brilliant. And all your years with P&L experiment, you're brilliant. And you know how to do the number. It's just amazing. You offer where somebody can go to your site and take the course for free. You mentioned it last time. I don't have it right in front of me, and I'd like to tell our listeners again.
So we've moved the course to a site that's better suited. So the largest online university in the world is called Udemy. U-D-E-M-Y, Udemy.com.
Right, Udemy.
So if you go to Udemy.com and add /realfocus, so Udemy.com/realfocus, you'll notice that there are huge numbers of people taking a course. Right now, I think there's 1,500 people enrolled. It's a free course. Everything that I'm talking about here is expanded in that course, and I give you specifics, like the specific amount of population growth that a city should have, the specific amount of job growth, income growth, home price growth, crime reduction, all of them. What is the band that makes sense? What happens when a city is at 2% job growth? And what happens to that city when it goes up to 3% job growth? And at 4% job growth, those insane things that happen to a city, what do they look like, right? And what happens at 5% job growth? There are three cities in the United States today that are at 5% job growth. I can tell you, if you go into a city when it's at 5% job growth, everything you touch will instantly turn to gold. We are all Midas in a city with 5% job growth.
Wow.
Those things are explained in that course. So it's udemy.com/realfocus. And you'll see hundreds of people taking the course.
Now, two quick questions before we get into Coyote Creek too, because I want to you're amazing, and with all that's going on in the government, you know, changes, cleanups, all kinds of things, many people have two trains of thought on like the Section 8 programs, the housing voucher programs, where people you know, you can buy as a landlord, and then the government, the local cities, it's set up between city, county, and federal, so there's different programs, will actually pay pay you the rent for the people. What is your take on that? Because it looks like those programs may be fading out over time, and that guaranteed money might not be there. Although there's problems that come with it too, because people aren't always taking care of the properties when this happens either. But.
Well, let's assume the best case for a second. Let's assume you are taking care of your property and your property is qualifying for Section 8 or for housing vouchers. I still believe, and this comment is general in nature, there are exceptions of states and cities. I believe that what is happening is this. Each state and the federal levels, municipalities, are piling up debt. And each year, the percentage of our revenue that comes in, that goes to paying our debt, increases. At a federal level, it's increasing very rapidly. So social programs, such as housing vouchers and Section 8, each year, the percentage that the housing voucher is paying versus what the tenant is paying is decreasing. And it's sharply decreasing in places like Illinois, but also in many other Rust Belt states, it's decreasing very sharply. My advice to people is the time of Section 8 is past. And yes, there are probably
time to get out of it and put your money somewhere else. Yes.
I believe so. Yeah. I believe that the government support for housing has been declining. Do you know that the president that really shut down the affordable housing program or reduced it in America was actually Clinton? So in 1999, we were
building
over 100,000 units. That's right. It was part of a bartering for something else that he wanted. And today, last year, we built 17,000 affordable housing units in this country. We built over 100,000 of them 20 years ago. 100,000, which was not enough.
Wow.
We were building 100,000
right.
a year. We built 17,000. So affordable housing programs are going away. And Section 8, I don't think it's going away. I think the problem is each year you're going to see the percentage that comes from the city is going to keep declining. So this is a death by 1,000 cuts.
Yeah,
it's
a
slow death.
And people I've spoken to, they're no longer paying many aren't paying the security. You know, the government's not necessarily. I'm just speaking openly, but for the different talking to different agents and brokers, the government hasn't been paying. Years ago, the government would pay the security deposits. If there was damage, they would pay that after
right.
the person moved. And they've been pulling away from that, you know, not paying the full security, maybe a portion of it, not paying any damages. You know, they want people to go after the tenants. So it sounds totally with what you're saying. It makes so much sense. Then you have some
right.
of the other
and
issues
inspections
there, too.
Used to be free. Now they charge for them, right?
Yeah.
So now,
exactly.
in a thousand
right.
different ways, they're bleeding away at the landlord's profit, and it's happening in slow motion, so you don't really realize what's happening. You know, you're like that frog
Isn't
in the pan when you turn up the heat.
That,
right?
I thought that exactly what you were – I thought about the frog just now, exactly. I
right.
think it's – you put them in the tepid
cool.
water and then go, and then it boils. It takes – you've got
yeah.
minds think alike. Hey, so the second question before – because we want to go over is that before I forget – So say somebody right now, you're working on one of your projects, and I want to invest
mm-hmm.
in your project, and I have a property
mm-hmm.
that's Section 8 that I'm going to sell, and I
mm-hmm.
have to 1031 it, of course, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
am I able to 1031 that into your projects because there's actively for sale, or is it that – how do people – I don't know how that works with the projects you're doing.
So my projects – about roughly one quarter of the equity that comes in from investors, right? And I'll use the Coyote mm-hmm. Creek project as an example. We're raising $6 million of equity. $1.5 million of that, so a quarter of it, is coming from people that are basically 1031-ing from by selling their property into this large multifamily that I'm building, right? So they end up
okay.
as a co-owner, and people say, well, no, you can't do that, the 1031 money going into a syndication because you're going to stick me in an LLC and I need to be on the deed. The answer is
right.
no.
Right.
I actually create a tenant in common and an LLC, and all of the people
okay.
that have 1031 money, they don't go into that LLC. They can't. They go into the
okay.
tenant in common.
Right.
And that tenant in common
okay.
is
that,
not
an
investor in the project.
And I was wondering.
It's a co-owner,
okay.
right? So you are co-owners
okay.
of the project. And because you're co-owners, you're compliant with 1031 laws.
Okay. Perfect. Perfect.
So the
really,
answer is
it's
yes.
really important.
It's
awesome.
It's complicated for us and
right.
increases the paperwork that we do. But we do it, and we
right.
we keep it to about 25%, and that's usually the part that fills up first in our projects. It fills up immediately
sure.
for people that are looking to find a way out of, you know, they want to be entirely passive. And they've seen the demographics work that I do, and I'll give you examples of, you know, how I found this particular city, Washington City in St. George. And I've been talking about it on my podcast. If you type in Neil Bawa Space Podcast, you're going to notice that I've been talking about that St. George Metro for a while, because using the formulas that I've built for that Udemy course that I gave you, there are these five metrics that I look at for cities and five metrics that I look at for neighborhoods. And the area that I'm investing in now has absolutely insane numbers
wow.
for those 10 metrics. They're so burned into my mind that I remember every part of them, right? I remember every number, and I know just how astonishingly beneficial these numbers are. The other thing that's really beneficial is the fact that Utah has Mormons, and you might go, well, what does that have to do with real estate? I mean, Utah has Mormons. What's the big deal there? And I can tell you that if you understand how these kinds of localized things impact real estate, you can make a lot of money. You can make an incredible amount of money. So, you know, hopefully in this
wow.
show we have a chance to actually go into that, into how, you know, how
yeah.
just like, you know, you have Honolulu basically saying, we don't want to do any new construction. That creates a massive opportunity for landlords. Well, in the same way, you have this community of Mormons in Utah, right? So Utah is a predominantly Mormon state, and I love investing
right.
there. Because number one, and this is, once again, I mean, I know this is funny, but they have a lot of babies. They have, you know, all of my partners in Utah. They've got 5 kids, 6 kids, 8 kids.
They have
kids.
Huge families.
Huge families.
Yeah.
And whenever you yeah. want to invest in a state, you want to have a very high birth rate, right? That's why California has been a great place to invest in since the 1970s or 80s, because the Hispanic population has a much higher birth rate than the white population. And so California
right.
had tremendous population growth. But when you look at Utah, everybody's got 5 or 6 kids. And so you're investing into a state that has such massive population growth that it's going to
yeah.
run out of land. And city after city and county after county in Utah is running out of land. And people think of Utah and they say, oh, it's a flat place. No, there's mountains on one side and there's water on the other, and there's a narrow piece of land in the middle. And then you have America's richest church, which is worth hundreds of billions of dollars. That simply
mm-hmm.
buys the land. They keep buying the land,
right.
and their holding strategy
right.
is not 3 years, it's not 5 years, it's not 10 years. They often hold for 50. They hold for 100, right?
Mm.
They're not the richest church in Utah, they're the richest church in America. And they love owning
wow.
land.
I didn't
and what
know
they've
that.
Done in a way is they create artificial scarcity, Natalie. They create scarcity in the land because they suck everything up out of the marketplace. And it becomes very difficult to find land. I love investing in places with this form of artificial scarcity, because otherwise there would be more land available in the marketplace and we could build more in Utah. But it's really hard to find the right piece of land in the right place. And so it's created this wealth effect where Utahns in the last 10 years have gained such an incredible amount of net worth that now they're looking to invest
really?
That. And they're investing it in their own state for you know, because they're a very close-knit community, they tend to have a tendency to invest in their own state as opposed to going out and buying something in Miami, for instance. They don't tend to do that. And so if you look at Utah, it's a cold state, right? Salt Lake City, Provo, these are all cold places. But then
mm-hmm.
it's a narrow state. And if you keep going south, at the very end of the state where it hits Arizona, Nevada, there's a city called St. George. And St. George's weather
St. George.
Is not like anywhere else in Utah. St. George has weather that is, let's say, halfway in between Salt Lake City's cold weather and Vegas's super hot weather, right? So it's in the middle. So it's really, really
wow.
nice weather. And it is surrounded by these beautiful red mountains, right? So the place is so insanely beautiful. Like everywhere, you just, anywhere in St. George, stand and you're surrounded by these beautiful sheer red mountains, right? And
wow.
because of the phenomenal weather and the fact that it's in Utah, you have all these rich Utahns buying second homes. If you Google second homes in St. George, the number that comes up is eye-popping. It's like, oh my God, look at this ridiculous number of second homes. This city must be incredibly rich, and it is. Its average income is 20, 30%, I'd say more than 30%, above Salt Lake City, because the people that are buying there are people that have extra money to spare, and they're buying basically second homes there.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is that because Zion National Park is 30 minutes away, and more than 3 people visit Zion National Park for climbing and hiking and extreme sports. The area is known for its extreme sports, like Ironman, right? The Ironman event is
right.
held there every year. And so are a huge number of extreme sports events. And so it attracts this 3 million, you know, population, kind of the tourist population. And so the city itself is fairly small, but it fills up. So if you're looking, if you're an Airbnb superhost, and you're looking for a great place to do Airbnb, look at St. George, Utah. Because the city is surrounded by mountains, there really isn't much scope for expansion. So it's not like there's endless amounts of free land available. It's not like that, right? And a lot of it is
right.
owned by the Mormon Church, and they're not selling. So you've got a situation
wow.
where the city is in the right place. It's in a state that has had
right.
an incredible wealth effect over the next 10 years. And all of that leads me back to those metrics that I use. The first one is population growth, right? And the U.S. typically grows at less than 1% population growth a year. That's the average, 0.8, 0.9. So I'm looking for places where population growth is 2 times the U.S.'s growth or even 3 times. And those places exist, right? Places that are growing 2 or 3 times faster than the U.S. Well, what is amazing is that St. George, the metro of St. George, has been growing at 4 to 5 times the population growth of the U.S. And the city that I'm investing in, Washington City, has grown at 15 times the speed of the U.S.'s population growth in the last 17 years. 15x, not 50% more, 15 times more. And when places like this exist, you can imagine what happens to rents. Rents go up at insane levels. And so, you know, the St. George and Washington City are at that 5% annualized rent growth level. I call it the naked dancing in a street with a bottle of champagne level, right? So I have these levels defined. 2%, you're content as a landlord. At 3%, you're really happy. At 4%, you're ordering champagne bottles. And at 5%, you're doing the naked dance in the street with a champagne bottle. And it's beyond those levels, right? Every landlord in that city, regardless of whether they have a great property or an awful property, is succeeding because of that population growth. And crime is incredibly low. You look at some of these places, when you invest in Detroit, that crime is going to impact your returns very, very significantly.
True.
When you go to St. George, people are leaving the doors open because the city has so little crime. It's a community.
Amazing.
And so crime levels are ridiculously low. They have Dixie State University, which has extremely high enrollment growth. And so young students are coming into the city constantly and then deciding to stay because they love the area. They see the growth. And because Mormons have had huge families, all they've ever built are 4-bedroom and 5-bedroom homes. Because Mormons usually don't build 2 and 3-bedroom homes, right? They build these massive 4-bedroom homes. And so the city has all these big homes and no apartments, because the Mormons are like, well, you have a big family. Who's going to live in an apartment that has 2-bedroom and 3-bedroom communities? And that made sense.
Right.
Only now you have this massive influx of people from California, you know, Nevada, Las Vegas, Arizona. All these people are coming in, and then you have people coming in from Utah. And nobody is addressing that population, which now has, you know, singles or a couple or 3 or 4 people in their families. So now that the area has an extreme shortage of smaller units, smaller apartments, because nobody built any in the last 30 or 40 years. They all built big.
Right.
And that is a demographics challenge. And that's what we are solving with the Coyote Creek project, right? So 1-bedroom, 2-bedroom, and then some 3-bedroom apartments and townhouses.
Okay, 1-bedroom, 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom apartments and townhouses. So I'm
assuming
that the zoning laws must be pretty good there, huh? Or they're pretty easy to work with?
They're
when
extremely
you're building
easy to work with. You know, I'm from California.
Wow.
I'm from Silicon Valley. And sometimes the sort of zoning and permitting that takes 9 months in California can take less than 9 weeks or longer. Yeah, I mean, I've been in projects that have gone 3 years. That takes 9 weeks to do in St. George. It's the speed at which you can do these things and then the speed at which you can construct are so astonishing that these are unfair advantages. I tell people, and I use this word all the time, and sometimes people say, Neil, why do you say that? And I say, because, you know, in my mind, it represents an advantage. It's like you've got game the slot machines in Vegas. You're not gaming them in some cheating way. You're gaming them by your knowledge of data, right? I tell people, data is the oil of the 21st century. Data is the oil of the 21st century. You lived in Texas 50 or 100 years ago, you couldn't help but be rich because there was oil all around you and everyone was getting rich. Well, today, that oil is everywhere. It's in your room right now. It's on your phone. It's on your computer. That oil is there. So the wealth that it can create is incredible. All you have to do is open your eyes and be able to see the demographics. of amazing cities like St. George, like Dalton, you know, Georgia, cities like Cape Coral and Fort Myers in Florida, the Villages, Deltona, Lakeland, Florida. These are amazing places that have such crazy shortages. And no one seems to know.
Wow.
And I can't figure it out for the life of me. How do people not know this stuff? And I think that they're so busy just focusing on what they're seeing in front of them that they don't spend 1 or 2 hours looking at the web to figure all this stuff out.
And I think a lot of people, though, they may not have the cash and they need to get financing or get other funding or, you know, there's just so many different variables that come up, whether you're doing huge projects with builders or investors or it's an individual. It's amazing what you're doing is so – well, So how do they get on with you, with your project, if they want to get invest in Coyote Creek?
So my company, I run two companies. There's an education company, which is an easy one, and I suggest that everybody start there. It's multifamilyu.com. So multifamily university, multifamily followed by a U, the letter U.com. Go there and look at some of the education that we provide around these things. There's courses, there's the Udemy course that I mentioned. Start there and educate yourself on why apartments are an incredible demographic trend. America's middle class is hollowing out. And as it hollows out, people are moving. Basically, they have no choice but to go for apartments. The single family homeownership rate has been falling since 2005. It blipped up a little bit into 2018, and now it's starting to go down again. And the reason for that is that millennials are so burdened with student debt. They're so burdened with jobs that don't pay well that they're simply not buying. And multifamily university exposes all of these trends in free education. My corporate website, for those that are looking to be passive investors, let me finish this part, is growcapitus.com. So that's G-R-O, no W, G-R-O, Capitus, C-A-P-I-T-U-S.com. So growcapitus.com. And there you can see projects, and you can actually see Coyote Creek. You can just go to the website, and right on the main page, you can see Coyote Creek. Click on it, and there's a beautiful video that shows you everything that we know about this project.
That's absolutely perfect. With the government changing the exemptions, the last for the tax exemptions, I don't know how long it's going to last or if it'll be repealed. You know, who knows what's going to happen? But one of the huge benefits of house ownership has always been to get the tax write-offs, right? And now that they're changing that, depends on what income you are, level you're at. That definitely.
I think it's affecting the blue states. And so if you notice, the first time that people paid those taxes was in 2018. It takes some time for people to realize how big of a change it is in expensive places like California or New York. Now people are beginning to realize, oh my God, I'm paying way more in taxes than I was last year because that SALT exemption, state and local tax exemption, is essentially lopped off. It's gone for expensive, real estate. And so this is going to depress expensive real estate all across the U.S. for the next 20 years. I'm not sure
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I'm just wondering if it's going to get repealed.
Right? In my mind, though, what is likely to happen is that they're not going to repeal the whole thing, right? So the truth is that while, there's a pattern these days, Democrats come into power, they undo what, Republicans did, and the Republicans do the same thing when they come into power. Some of these things are left unchanged because the states need the taxes. In the end, if you're in government, there's always the tendency to charge more in tax. And keep in mind that Democrats tend to be more aggressive on charging taxes than Republicans do. And so what we've done here is that we've taken away a loophole, right? In their mind, it's a loophole, and are now charging more taxes. And if you look at, Taxifornia, I live in Taxifornia, they tend to charge taxes on everything, right? And so I don't see them undoing that.
I see the
Democrats working on undoing other parts of Republican legislation if they come back into power. But I think they're going to leave this taxation there, right? And so we had a free ride on the state and local taxes for a long time, and it's just come to an end. So I'm going to bet that they don't take these taxes away simply because they need the money. The states need the actual money. And so there's going to be so much argument within government that, hey, just let it be, right? The states sort of absorbed it. And you know, yeah, we took the big hit, right? I live in Fremont, California, the home of Tesla. 7,000 Tesla engineers have moved into this city in the last 4 years. My taxes every year are $19,000, right? And because I've had my home for a long time, my taxes, my property taxes and my mortgage are the same amount. And each year, you know, I could refinance and my mortgage would actually be smaller than my real estate taxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so people have to, they have to understand that this is not a normal situation. And taking that subsidy away in a week, you know, obviously it hurts me, right? I'm paying way more in taxes than I was last year because of the property tax exemption being gone. But I have to tell you something, honestly. This is something that should be done because we have to adjust to the reality of the situation. We shouldn't say what this is allowed to do, California to do, is to run home prices up to an insane level. Nothing in California when it comes to home prices makes any sense whatsoever. And part of the problem was, you know, the proposition, whatever, Proposition 3, the one that restricts our growth in property taxes, it was this the state and local tax exemption. Because of this exemption, California basically got this license to run up home prices to completely preposterous levels. If these exemptions hadn't been in place, I think our market would have been a little more common sense. And in general, that's what I like. That's what I like. I like the free market. When you start tampering with it, you end up with these crazy situations. California is looking to implement rent control. That is another one of those tampering with market scenarios where you get relief
really
today.
Yeah.
No, I mean, look at the 50-year track record of rent control in this country, Natalie. All you get is you get relief for the next 3 to 5 years. It's a populist thing to do. You'll have people voting for you. If you're a mayor and
it's
you
terrible,
implement it, you're going to be governor. But here's the problem. 10 years down the line, because nobody is building anything, now you're going to suffer for decades just to have a few years of relief up front.
Just an example for some people listening in later, that for rent control, you know, an example would be, say, in New York City, okay, they can't raise the rents higher than a certain amount. You've got people, so landlords having buildings may have people in there renting for $1,000 a month when they could rent it for $4,000 or $5,000. What's that going to do? It's going to stop them from it continuing to invest, right? It's just a
I'm
just mentioning
what happens
that
is people move
because you and I are used to what it is, but
exactly
right.
So look at all these rich people in California and all these rich people in New York. Guess where they're investing? Utah, Florida, Texas.
Wow.
So what's happening is that the lifeblood of the state, its money, its investors, are actually getting sucked away to go to another state because they're so scared that even worse rent control will come in. So it already exists, and it's going to get worse. And they're like, there's no way I'm going to invest in my own city, in my own state. That's what excessive, you know, tampering with the free market causes. And if it worked, I would say fine. If rent control actually worked, I would say fine. But Google the following words, impact of rent control in the past.
It
does not work.
It absolutely
does not. It
does
the exact opposite of what it's supposed to do.
I agree.
Right? It raises rents over time because there's zero new supply. And so the only reason why California is implementing rent control is because rent control is popular with the electorate who does not understand what they're doing. And so now you can have Democrats elected to the legislature because they ran on a promise of rent control. This is no different from how Trump promised us everything to get elected. It's not different, right? So people are saying, you know, if I use the word rent control, I'm going to get elected to the legislature. I'm going to be mayor. I'm going to be governor. So I'm going to say rent control.
True.
Even though they know that it doesn't work. And this
no,
is why.
I wouldn't vote for that. So,
yeah. I mean,
no,
people
not a,
say
now let me ask you
silly things.
It's
yeah,
crazy.
Let me say
crazy.
Something
I agree
that
with you 100%.
Recently I've started
okay.
saying to people. I am a liberal Democrat. Cut me and I'll bleed blue, but I only invest in red states. And I say that, and people sometimes challenge and I say, that doesn't make any sense, Neil. And I said, and my answer is, I'm investing other people's money. I cannot make emotional decisions. I cannot make political decisions. I can only make economic decisions. And economically,
right, very smart.
At this point, it doesn't make sense for me to invest in a state that politically aligns with me. I have to invest in a state that economically aligns with me because it's other
people's
money.
Let me ask you a quick question because we have about 11 minutes left and I want you to take over. I just want to ask a quick question. Okay, so say somebody wants to invest. They're going to go ahead and invest in Fort Myers because that's a good
mm-hmm.
place to invest in Florida. And it's a 1031 or they're going to do investment properties. And you're saying single family homes are not going to be as popular. Would you say they should look into multifamily in that area or duplexes or what would you suggest?
I would say,
if they're not
going
to go
honest,
in and be doing a huge project with a lot of people, yes.
Yeah, I don't think that single family is a bad investment purely for landlording purposes. I think that people
okay.
are going to buy less single family, and that trend has started in 2005, and if you can find it on the internet by searching for home ownership rate, and you'll see the decline. So in my mind, a single family is a good investment for a landlord. You know, invest with me if you'd
okay.
like to be hands-off. If you don't mind tenants, if you don't mind toilets, if you don't mind leases, then I think in some of these cities that I'm mentioning, you could invest in single families. Duplexes, triplexes, quadplexes. A lot of people are afraid of going 5 units. And I challenge you, it's just a mindset. When you're buying a 6-unit
right.
or a 10-unit, it's so much
right.
better. So much better than buying
right.
a 2 or a 3-unit. So, yes, if
right.
you want to be active and don't mind the tenants and toilet piece, I suggest you go up. Why buy a single-family home? Do you realize that a person with a
right.
bankruptcy can buy a 6-unit, but they can't buy a 2-unit? Because they're looking at the income of the property beyond the 4 units level. They're looking at the income of the property,
right. Right.
not the income of the person buying.
Right.
But you may not be
right.
able to buy a 2-unit because you have too much debt. Well, the same person could go buy a 6-unit 2 days later. And so get into
right.
that multifamily
right.
side and you realize it's a different world. It has a completely different
exactly.
set of rules. And they're very, very advantageous to investing. Like what we do in our world is when we buy a new building. I bought a building in Atlanta called Windward Forest last year in October. The first thing I did, the moment I walked into that building, I had $3 million of investor money. I walked in and I did something known as cost segregation. You really can't do that at any reasonable price in single family. I did something called cost segregation, which is they take depreciation and they accelerate it. Instead of doing it over 27 or 37 years, they say, oh, this chair only has 5 years of life left. That boiler only has 2 years. This computer is going to be junk in 3 years. So they speed everything up. And so at the end of that year, I gave my investors who gave me $3 million, I gave them more than $3 million in losses, more than the money
Fantastic.
That they invested in losses. So if you invested $100,000,
wow.
you had $102,000 in paper losses, even though you were receiving cash flow for the property. Those paper losses were being handed to you so you can hand them to your tax attorney. Those kinds of unique advantages only really exist in the multifamily large asset class. That's where you can get
Makes
these kind of crazy
sense.
Benefits.
Makes total sense.
And completely
yeah.
legal to do this, by the way. Completely legal. There's no gray area here.
Right. I wouldn't expect any gray area with you. I mean, because you're so good at this, and you know it like the back of your hand. I'm always about doing any of it as long as it's legal anyhow. You know, if there's loopholes, I'm always about using
yep.
loopholes. But so much of it is knowledge. It's knowledge. It's just getting out and understanding it and doing it and taking action, right?
That's why people need to listen to these kinds of shows. Taking action comes first from
right.
absorbing knowledge. But then don't wait too long. Don't wait for the next show. Don't wait for the one after that, right? Every show has
right.
some action item. Maybe the action item from this show is, I'm going to go to udemy.com/realfocus and take that free course. Or
exactly.
I'm going to Google my favorite cities. My mom lives in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I'm going to go check Coeur d'Alene, Idaho out. What is its population increasing? What about its income growth? What about its job growth? Pick your
right.
favorite cities and profile five of them. I guarantee in half an hour, you'll be amazed at the differences between places. And those differences translate into profits in your pocket.
Really, absolutely. This has been wonderful, Neil. And you always give more than you just give so much. And your system is amazing. Your system is working in every way, shape, and form. And gosh. I'm going to check into it. I want to start doing something with you, too. We've so much, you know, there's so much going on always, and we always have to just focus and decide which is our
yes.
highest, best place to put our energy and where we, because nowadays it's such a different world than what we were used to years ago. I want to go back a little bit. I want to go backwards and then keep that the simplicity, but then
mm-hmm.
Take advantage of the knowledge that's at our hands these days.
Things are more complex now. There's no doubt that compared to the 80s, investing is much more complicated. But if you can deal with the slight complexity, and again, everything's complex the first or second time you do it. The third time, it's not complex. The Real Focus system takes me 3 hours to teach on the web. I have received hundreds and hundreds of students who, you know, they're not invested with me. They just send me emails saying, I bought this in this market. I bought this in that market, and I used the system, and the difference was so stark. My properties are run better. There's no crime. My tenants stay in for a long time. And I did this by simply following the metrics that you gave us, and they send me a thank you, right? They're not investing with me because
mm-hmm.
they're happy doing whatever they're doing in those states or cities. And I think that gives me great pleasure. And I challenge you guys to spend your time,
you're passing
2 hours or 3 hours, to learn more, and you'll be amazed at how simple it is. It's not that complex to pole vault yourself into the top 0.1% of all investors in America. It's not that hard to go from being a speculator, which is what most people are in real estate. We are speculators
true.
Because we invest in our own city, in our own neighborhood, because it's within driving distance. What does that have to do with the quality of the area? Driving distance? Are you going to be this magic person that somehow improves the area simply because you can drive there? Are you going to improve your tenants?
Are you going to
improve your property?
You know.
it doesn't make any sense.
It's
right, but people do it all the time.
So
I want to only, you know, do a 5 mile radius. Why?
Right.
Because I can drive there. Because
it's convenient
why?
For them, and they're afraid.
Right.
Sometimes they do this fear factor. I think people. And they have fear
yeah.
factor because they're not getting educated, and they're not looking at it, and they're just, you know, it's a comfort too for some people. Some people stay in their comfort zone. It can really hurt them in the long run, you know. And so, but I agree.
That's really the key.
You have such
it's
a great
comfort
system.
Zone. Thank you,
yeah.
thank you. And I love, you know, disseminating this information, because if people were better real estate investors, we wouldn't get such crazy
mm-hmm.
swings in real estate. We'd get this upward movement, which is driven by demographics, cost of construction is through the roof. There's no reason for real estate to not go up for the next 20 or 30 years.
And we can go back, and then you've got these families that, you know, are building wealth, and you're passing it on, leaving a nice legacy, and so on and so on, right? It's definitely
it's about that. It is about freedom, right? I encourage people that
yes.
every time you buy a single-family home and you get your first rent check, it's stabilized. The last thing, I know that the tendency is, I'm going to take this check and go out buy the second property. I tell people, I want you to pause for a minute and think of one thing that you can do today to improve your life today before you go out and buy that second property. People are always in this frenzy of investing, and they forget that the whole point of investing is, number one, financial freedom, and number two, quality of life. So the last property that I closed, I gave myself a gift, and it might seem very selfish, but it was a great gift. That gift is that I now can pay for a massage therapist to come to my house, every weekend and base for the rest of my life and can massage, give
right.
me a massage. And you know, you get to the point where your body is so knotted up and you start damaging yourself.
I get them all the time, but I go there.
Right?
I, they don't come
right?
in. You're
so,
right.
So in my mind,
right.
you know, it was like I want somebody to come to my home so I can be in my bed and well, you know, in my bedroom
right.
and basically have him set up and do this. And to me, that's
right.
quality of life. I didn't go out there and buy a Ferrari.
Right.
I have no interest in buying, you know, expensive homes and boats
exactly.
and things like that. But I'm
right.
gifting myself either time or I'm gifting myself things
exactly.
that really give